You are listening to Talking Hoosier Baseball, a podcast by fans from the iubase.com website for anyone wanting more info on Indiana University baseball. I'm Carl James, joined today by stats guru Cassidy Palmer and the creator of iubase.com, Josh Bennett. Chris Feeney, unfortunately, will no longer be joining us as he is taking his talents to Stark Vegas and will be headlining a new podcast on Mississippi State baseball. We wish Chris all the best. You can follow him at the new Twitter handle at CUatTheDude. Today is Monday, April 1st, 2019. Now, Chris wanted me to make the April Fool's joke that he had moved back to New York because, and I quote, "The Mets just made too many good moves. I can't miss it this year." Sorry, Chris. I just thought you moving to Starkville, Mississippi was more realistic than a quality Mets season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Chris does have some conflicts, including a trip to Citi Field, and will rejoin Talking Hoosier Baseball in 2 weeks. Have a great time, Chris. We will miss you. Now, the Indiana Hoosiers got the week off on the wrong foot in one of the ugliest games ever played at Bart Kauffman Field. The Hoosiers committed 6 errors en route to a 12-inning loss to Kent State. Coach Mercer did not pull his punches in the post-game interview.
Literally anything. We had 16 free bases. We made 6 errors at my last count, and we had terrible approaches offensively. So, and we had poor base running. So you add that together, and it's really a minor miracle that we were even in the ballgame ended up. Literally nothing fundamentally right. We didn't do or execute any of the plans that we outlined before the game. We didn't do anything that could even be like confused for decent baseball.
It seems the team heard the coach and responded. While Friday was a losing effort, it was a well-played, traditional Friday night pitcher's duel. Maryland's Hunter Parson held the Hoosiers to 2 hits and no runs in 8 innings. The Hoosiers only struck out 5 times and had a lot of hard contact at Adam balls. Well, the hard hitting finally found turf and cleared fences starting on Saturday. Now, on a personal note, in the mailbag last week, I discussed options for filling the shoes of the injured Logan Kalitha. That was when Chris chimed in with this.
So, look at that. Maybe this is an opportunity to switch the DH to have Matty a couple of games there, and then you don't have the issue come the ninth inning, and he can't get warm because he's got to take the field.
Yeah. But then that also limits you that you need to have someone who's a good quality first baseman.
We might have.
Yeah. So
yeah, I think we do.
I think
we'll see what happens with Scotty.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we all know that Chris was referring to Scotty Bradley, who just got his shot this weekend, and he went 8-for-14 with 3 home runs, 5 RBIs, and improved his batting average to .231 on the year. I apologize, Scotty, and will not overlook you again. Congrats on the breakout weekend. Of course, it wasn't just Scotty. The Hoosiers set the bar for Division I college baseball this season by hitting 9 home runs on Saturday en route to a 20-5 win. Tanner Gordon went 7 innings, giving up only 1 earned run and striking out 5. The Hoosiers jumped out to a big lead in the rubber match and ended up running away with it 19-4. In the weekend series, all 3 starters put up quality starts. With as much scoring as the Hoosiers did this past week, we could spend an hour on Hoosier highlights, but we will have to pick just a few. I will start with Matt Lloyd's bomb in the 8th inning on Sunday. It marked his 7th RBI of the day, his 2nd home run of the day, his 3rd extra base hit, and gave the Hoosiers 52 home runs on the year, passing New Mexico State for the most home runs in the nation. Cass, what highlight do you have?
So I'm going to go a different direction with my highlight, and I'm going with the starting pitching this weekend. Like Carl said, all 3 starters had quality starts this weekend, and particularly with Tanner and Andrew on Saturday and Sunday, they could have so easily gone into cruise control. When you are up by that much, it can sometimes make it hard to hone in and really be on your game. But they stayed locked in. They kept it going. And poor Pauly, he had to fight the entire time, but he still had a quality start. He had a good game. So my highlight's definitely the pitching, even on a weekend with that much offense. So Josh, what do you have for highlights?
Thanks, Cass. So many places to go with this. Carl mentioned Scotty in the intro, and Lloyd is his highlight. You, Cass, with the starting pitching. So I'm going to go with Grant Richardson's incredible game on Saturday. 5 for 6 with 4 runs scored, drove in 6 runs, mashed 3 home runs, with one of them being a grand slam. That's a good week. Grant did it in one game. Both Saturday and Sunday was great for almost everyone in the lineup, but that was just a standout effort to me with his 5 hits on the day. That made it the 4th time in the season that he's managed at least 3 hits in a game. An interesting note on that is that moved him into 3rd place in the IU record books for most in a true freshman's campaign. The 2 guys ahead of him you may have heard of, Dustin DeMuth, who did it 9 times in 55 games, and Kyle Schwarber, who had 7 3-hit games in 60 games in his freshman year. So just to put what he's done in perspective, remember that this is only his 12th game. As impossible as it would be to sustain that pace with 28 games left for the regular season, that would put him at 13 on the year. And if he had played all 55 games on the schedule and maintained it, he would have doubled up, double D, with 18. So what an incredible run. And that's going to wrap up our Hoosier highlights of the week. So it's time to hand out some hardware. It's red belt time. As Carl mentioned earlier, we're a man down tonight without Chris Feeney. My joke was going to be something along the lines of him being injured in some kind of umpire confrontation gone wrong. but then I also just got a text after the intro that Drew was watching it on the TV in the other room, and he got teary-eyed when he thought Chris actually left. So no more jokes. So tonight we're going to stick with the Hoosiers theme on the season and plug the hole in the lineup with a more than capable teammate. So Cass, you get the nod. The spotlight's on you. Who are you giving the red belts to this week?
Oh, yay. Okay. So I had a pretty difficult time sorting out most of these, and especially the Tony Butler red belt. It's kind of hard to make the fielding red belt pick when there was no video this weekend, just going on Greg's call and all of that. But you don't really need to show that Matt Gorski's pair of outfield assists were big. The first one was in the 8th inning of the Kent State game, a game that went into extra innings, and it was, again, at the plate. The second one was the 5th inning of the 1st Maryland game, so another close game. So Matt Gorski gets the Butler red belt this week for those outfield assists, and especially playing center field when he's been in right most of the season, picking up the spot of Logan Kalitha while he's out. That's really big. The Joey Donato red belt is going to go to Pauly. It could have very easily gone to any of the weekend starters. I also looked at Gabe Bierman because he pitched really well this week as well. But I'm giving it to Pauly. It's one thing to pitch really well when your team has a 12-15 run lead. It's another to pitch when your team's down 2-0 and just 2 hits, and that's a much more difficult position. And Pauly pitched a solid game, just got no offense behind him. So I'm going to give Pauly that one with the situation and how well he pitched. The Dickerson Award. Can I say it goes to everyone? Is that an option? The whole offense was firing, especially games 2 and 3. I did decide to go with a few honorable mentions here. I'm going to throw in Wyatt Cross for the biggest hit of the weekend against Kent State. That big home run, that's got to be in there somewhere. I'm going to go with Scotty. He had the big breakout weekend, really swung the bat well. And, of course, Grant Richardson. It seems like nobody can slow him down right now, whoever you throw against him. But I'm going to side with the Big Ten this week and go with Matt Lloyd for the Dickerson Award. He hit 412 on the week, 500 when you look at just the weekend, and that's with going, what, 0-for-3 on Friday? So he had some big hits, had 5 home runs, 2 doubles. All of his hits were extra base hits, had 11 RBI, scored 8 runs. It doesn't get much better than that. So I went with Matty, sided with the Big Ten before they even announced it. So to recap, that's Matt Gorski for the Butler, Paulie Milto for the Donato, and Matt Lloyd for the Dickerson.
You've got mail. 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 You've got mail.
It's mailbag time. Well, we've got more mailbag questions in. Most of these questions rely heavily on statistics, but we split them up. And while Josh and I are not Cassidy on statistics, we did our best. So, Josh, Keegan asks, looking at bats from a statistical point of view, what is the difference in the number of pitches seen and ball strike counts from the start of the season to the last loss versus the games in the winning streak?
Okay, thanks for the question, Keegan. And thankfully, we have the luxury of having the best statistician in the planet, so we do have the actual numbers needed to accurately answer that question. Cass may have sent me over her cheat sheet. So we'll start by dividing the season into two segments. The first from opening day until after the second Cincy game, where the Hoosiers went 7-8. And our second will be from the first Canisius game through Sunday's game at Maryland, where they went 10-2. So to answer your first part, IU has actually seen a smaller number of pitches per plate appearance, although it's very small. 3.92 to start the season against 3.86 since then. To answer your question about ball strike counts, in the first segment, 38% of pitches seen were balls, which meant 62% were strikes, compared to 41% balls to 59% strikes in the back half. So they've seen 2% more balls recently than they did in the first half, which isn't a huge number. Kind of surprises me since we've hit much better recently and a hit would be considered a strike. So sorry we don't have a groundbreaking answer to your question tonight. In my opinion, I think the guys are just more comfortable at the plate and are clicking with the bat, you know, getting used to the new approach. So Cass, the next one's for you. Carl asks, how does this team's home run rate compare to previous seasons?
Okay, so thanks for your question, Carl. I went back the past 7 years, which takes it back to 2012, so the year before the College World Series trip. And so far on the year, the Hoosiers are hitting almost 2 home runs a game. They're hitting 1.9 home runs per game, and this was the craziest thing that I saw. They're going yard once every 21 plate appearances, which is really nuts. That one caught my eye. And already on the year, the team has more home runs than 4 out of the last 7 full seasons. And they currently have as many home runs as the 2013 team did the entire season. Yeah, you know, the team that had Schwarber, Travis DeMuth, all those guys, the current Hoosiers are already at that total. In fact, only 2 seasons out of the last 7, 2017 and 2018, averaged at least one home run per game. All of the others were sub one. 2017 was the best of the past seven seasons at 1.3 home runs per game and a home run every 32 plate appearances. So not that far off from where we are now. 2015 was kind of the worst of the power years at 0.6 home runs per game and a home run every 70 plate appearances. That's a pretty big difference. And I don't know if this current rate is sustainable, but in these last 7 years, through this point in the season, has been pretty consistent with what the end of year rate ends up being. The most it changed from mid-year to end of the year in any given year was 0.3 home runs per game. Even if I use home run rate goes down by half a home run per game, so they get down to about 1.4 home runs per game, it would still be higher than the next closest season. And again, in the last 7 years, we haven't seen a drop that big from this point in the season to the end. If the team can continue at this two home runs per game, they're going to blow everything out of the water, including my wallet with the home runs for mental health. I was expecting in the 68 to 75 range, and they are already at 52. So great job hitting them, and I'm always happy to pay for a good cause. So Carl, we actually have two more questions, and they are both going to you. First off, TC asks, so we still seem to have some issues with strikeouts despite the gaudy offensive numbers this weekend. Can we see any patterns in the numbers?
Well, thank you, TC. And I know you were looking for more of a statistical analysis, and we might challenge Cassidy to delve into that into some more detail for next week. But I have an angle I'd like to take on. I would almost say that if you look at Friday night, the game they lost against Maryland, I don't think Indiana struck out enough. Indiana struck out five times on Friday. You compare contact outs in a team like Maryland, against a team like Maryland, who really struggles with middle relief. So your goal in there is to run the pitcher. And the way you do that is you make the pitcher throw pitches. And this is part of the approach that Indiana has had, which is to see a lot of pitches. And the coaches mentioned this, and you take a risk with that, though. If you see a lot of pitches, you're going to get to a lot of two-strike counts. You get to a lot of two-strike counts, you're going to strike out a lot. And, you know, this team is looking for pitches they can drive. I think they felt they found those on Friday, but they drove them right at the defense. And, you know, sometimes baseball is just a game that gets you. But Maryland played a risky game by doing that, pitching to contact against a team that hits the ball this hard. And one time out of three, it worked out for them. We saw how it worked out for Maryland on Saturday and Sunday. I'm not flipping out over the strikeouts because I think they're part of the same overall mix, you know, that we're looking at, which is that it produces a lot of power. So there's a trade-off there. And at least in, you know, the last 12 games in general, it seems to have been more on the good side than on the negative. So that's my answer to that one.
Okay, so question number two comes from Brent Tonsoni. Sours, I'm not sure people expected the power numbers shown by this group so far. Is there an approach or something different this coaching staff has brought home runs?
Well, thank you very much, Brent. It was great to see you again at the Kent State game. It's interesting. I made a very similar comment, I think, to Josh the other night that it's like, really, did we think that losing Miller and Sours, that this team would add power after that? You just didn't think that was going to happen. Now, Coach Mercer wants you to believe it's the approach. And much like I answered in TC's question, you know, it's that idea that, well, okay, are we really hunting for that pitch, that we can drive. And then, you know, the price you pay is potentially more strikeouts. But when you do make contact, you hit it hard. You know, you look at, and Cassidy, you brought this up earlier, you know, the fact that Cole Barr has more home runs than singles. I'm not sure. I mean, honestly, this is baseball, and 27 games is not a huge sample size in baseball. So there could be just an anomaly here. But you even go back to the Tennessee series. These guys hit four home runs in the Tennessee series, if I remember right. A series which they were completely dominated. They still managed to leave the yard four times. So, you know, as I said, this is if it is the approach leads to two things. Better contact and more strikeouts, which is what we're seeing. You know, and that's all I can really say on that topic. But we'll move on now, because we've been, you know, I say move on. We've been talking about stats. We're not going to give up on stats right now, because we're going to go back to Cass. Cass, what other stat information do you have for us for this week?
Okay, so I don't have too much by way of this stats chunk, since I was working on stats for the questions and had an unexpectedly eventful weekend. So I really just looked at the pitching from this weekend a little more in depth. On the weekend, the starters gave up just 5 runs in 19 and a third innings. They threw 65% of their pitches for strikes, which is pretty darn good. And they struck out 31% of the batters they faced, which is also really good. Anytime you're getting close to that third of the batters you faced, you're striking out. That's usually a good thing. Opponents were only hitting 206 off of the starters, which is also good if you can get them close to that Mendoza line. They did walk 9% of their the batters they faced, which is a little higher than I would like the starters to be, just knowing how crisp these guys are. And Pauly had, I think, 3 walks, and that is not like Pauly. I think that was a little bit of a fluke, so I'm not too concerned with that yet. The part I am a little more concerned about is that 43% of the hits off of the starting pitchers went for extra bases. And that's a little, that's a little too much hard contact off of the starters than I would like. But also that includes what back-to-back leadoff home runs for Maryland in on Saturday and Sunday, both of their leadoff batters hit home runs. So that'll play into it when you're not giving up too many hits. Overall, the pitchers threw 62% of their pitches for strikes, which again, if you can get your whole staff up above 60 for the weekend, that's not bad. Struck out 32% of the batters faced. Opponents were hitting 223 off of them, which for, again, for the whole weekend, that's not a bad number. They did walk 11% of the batters they faced, which again, that's too high, but there is a little bit of wiggle room there. It's not horribly high. And almost 50% of the hits that they gave up were extra bases, at about 48%. That could just be a fluke of Maryland's ballpark, how the wind was blowing. It could be any number of things, but that's higher than we've seen most of the season for extra base hits. So that'll be a number to keep your eye on a little bit, but wouldn't be too super concerned at this point. So, Carl, all Big Ten teams have actually played in conference now. What have the first 2 weeks told us so far about the league?
Quite a bit, actually. And I am, I actually really like this Big Ten schedule compared to last season. Because last season, it seemed like it was like everything was set up to where the top of the conference was playing the bottom of the conference for the first few weeks. And it told you nothing. But not this one. Iowa came to Indiana in the first week, and Indiana punched Iowa in the mouth. And the last thing you expected was for Iowa to be able to take a series from Illinois. And that only partially happened. Actually, Iowa swept number 25 Illinois in Iowa City this week. That was a real shocker. Not that we don't know. We know that that Rick Heller's team manages to find ways to get themselves close to or into the postseason almost every year. But after that that Indiana series, we just did not think Iowa was going to have it. And then to go in and do that to Illinois was very, very impressive, and really has Illinois in a tough spot starting the conference out 0-3. Minnesota and Nebraska, kind of two similar stories. They got to play each other this past weekend. They had a tough battle, and Minnesota eked out a 2-3 series win, 2-1 series win, sorry. One of the big questions coming in was about Penn State, because they had such a really solid run in the non-conference season, but they have started league play out 0-5. So they are not taking well to the Big Ten. There was another competitive series with Ohio State and Rutgers, where Ohio State took a series 2-1. You know, the teams that the league play has not said anything about it yet are the two Michigan schools, Michigan and Michigan State, who played each other in only two games, and Michigan understandably won both of those. Michigan has proven again and again over the last 2 years that they can dominate teams that are not among the top echelon, and they proved that yet again. The question for Michigan is, can they do this kind of thing against the Illinois, the Minnesotas, the Iowas, the Indianas, maybe even the Ohio States of the league? And we won't know that yet until they really start facing that. And they're about to face Minnesota. So we'll finally start to get a picture to this, to what's going on. This could, though, end up being a season like 2017, where the league really beats up on each other, and it will only take maybe 18 wins to take home a title. We're going to get maybe teams like Minnesota and Indiana are going to break out and make a run and do something, or Michigan. We just don't know. But I have a much better idea. I think the biggest thing is Illinois is not running away with this, as I was kind of off on the idea that maybe Illinois was going to run away with this. And getting swept in your opening series is not going to lead towards that. That, you know, not to say Illinois can't win it. They can still win it, but they're going to have to play a much, much higher grade of baseball in order to do that. And that leaves an opening for Indiana. I think it really does. Now it's going to be an interesting week for the Hoosier head coach, Jeff Mercer. First off, he's going to face off against his old team. And after he does that, he's going to face off against the man who coached him when he was in college. Josh has the preview for this week's matchups. Josh.
Thanks, Carl. We've got four games on the schedule this week. Good thing is they're all at the BART, and I won't have to rely on a radio feed. As Carl said, we're going to get it kicked off Wednesday afternoon against Coach's former team, the Wright State Raiders of Fairborn, Ohio, a member of the Horizon League. This team is solid and battle-tested. They come in with a 18-8 record, being 7-4 on the road. They have wins against number 10 Mississippi, number 19 Oklahoma State, number 9 Eastern Carolina, and they've also beaten Canisius and Cincinnati twice. They just took a series this last weekend from Youngstown State, scoring 18 runs on 18 hits, so we weren't the only ones with a good Sunday. So this could be a wild one. Both teams average 7.5 games on the 7.5 runs per game on the season. They play Tuesday night, so this will be the fourth time. They have two midweeks, and they've managed to win all three previous back-end midweek starts. So Sam Wiersing is getting the nod. He's a big 6'6 freshman righty, really tough in three midweek starts, lasting more than five innings in each one. He's got, in midweek starts, he has 16 and a third innings pitched and has only given up two earned runs. He's got a 1.10 ERA in those starts, has only given up six extra base hits and no home runs allowed so far, so that might be something to look forward to on Wednesday night. Offensively, they have seven guys hitting over 280. They're led by junior right fielder Peyton Burdick. He's batting 411 with five home runs and 27 RBI. Also is 8-for-9 on steals for the season. And then their other big guy is senior left fielder J.D. Orr. He has a 281 average, and he is 23 of 28 steal attempts on the season. So as a team, they love to run. They're 51 for 36, which is a 81% success rate. IU is sitting at 30 out of 38, which is a 79% rate. So that's pretty close to being the same. I wonder who taught these two teams base running. With that aggressive approach, they're a lot more aggressive than we are, but still pretty good conversion rate. Just expect a high-scoring affair. Wright State has seven or more runs in 9 of their last 10 games, and we have scored 7 or more in 9 of our last 12, so it should be a fun one. Then on the weekend, we have a 3-game set against the Nittany Lions out of Penn State. Penn State is 14-8 this season, 3-3 on the road. They had a surprisingly good start to the season, but since then it's been 0-5 against Minnesota and Purdue in the conference. If weather lets them, they'll have two more midweek games this week before coming to the BART. Last season they were 15-34, but just 3-21 in the Big Ten. Last time we played, it was at the BART 2 years ago. IU took the series 2-1, but we actually did lose the Friday night game. They have seven freshmen and 5 JUCOs, so there are a lot of new faces for the Nittany Lions. They're not a power team, only 13 home runs for the year. Steal-wise, 25 out of 39 with 6 guys with 4 or more. They're led offensively by senior outfielder Jordan Bowersox. He leads the team in hits and runs scores, batting 305 and is 4-for-5 in steals. Sophomore infielder Chris Kremer leads the team in total bases and RBIs. Hit 3 homers in a game this year, was named Collegiate Baseball's Player of the Week for a 4-for-4 game with 6 RBIs versus Duke. So Grant might have someone to match him offensively this weekend. And then sophomore right-handed pitcher Mason Mellett is kind of like a Scott F. Ross, Andrew Miller guy, out of the bullpen, a 1.27 ERA, has a sidearm delivery, 4-1 with 3 saves out of the pen, 11 appearances. But they've got a pretty good Friday night guy, sophomore lefty Dante Bisai, 7 starts, 2-3. But even with that 2-3 losing record, he has a 2.03 ERA and only given up a batting average of 1.79. Only 1 home run given up in 40 innings and 57 strikeouts. So that might be another thing to look forward to. Staff has only given up 12 homers on the season. The team ERA is 3.43 and a batting average against of 2.15. So this week gets kicked off against the Raiders at 4:05 on Wednesday. Looks like close to 60 degrees and sunny for that one. Then a 3-game conference set against Penn State. Friday's a 6 o'clock start. It's 90s night. 65 degrees on the extended Saturday at 2 is Rally Towel giveaway. 70 degrees as of now. And Sunday at 1 is another Bark in the Park with an even higher forecast at 73. So it looks like it's going to be a great week to spend out the BART cheering on the Hoosiers. So, Carl, what are your final thoughts to wrap this week's podcast?
Well, I'm just going to wrap it up with a little bit of RPI. It's starting to get late enough that we can start talking about it. The interesting thing is I pulled up my model, and right now the Hoosiers are perfectly in line with the model that I had predicted as far as gaining an at-large bid goes. I had multiple models. This was one of them, and this is the one that they're on, would be to, you know, kind of land where they did last year, which is as a 2-seed in a regional. That's when you take the season as a whole, that's where the team is sitting. They could play themselves, especially with a Big Ten title, they could play themselves into a potential hosting situation. They could also, you know, hit a really bad slump and find themselves, you know, on the outside looking in come Selection Monday. But right now, the path is kind of that same steady get into the tournament path. We'll have to see more baseball as it progresses. There's still a lot of tough games left, particularly in the last 4 weeks of the season. And a lot of those games will determine what the postseason picture looks like. And I will start writing much more about that on iubase.com as we get deeper into April and eventually into May. Well, that will do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. Read up on Indiana baseball at iubase.com. Follow us on Twitter at CUAtTheBart and at IUBase17. Please leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. For Cassidy Palmer and Josh Bennett, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.
I'm going back to Indiana now to see my baby in her evening gown. And even if the world is burning down, I'm going back to